Today I want to talk about freedom both ways. The freedom to be limited. And the freedom to know ourselves, our roots in the unlimited. Without any contradiction. I want to start with the simple example of most of our experience is some form of insecurity much of the time. Some worry about how things will happen in the future. Some worry about what other people think. Some worry about whether I'll get what I need. And it's already a big act of bravery to come into that place, to kind of know that place of insecurity, which might be self-hatred, it might be pretense, it might be obsessing about something, someone, but especially future and past. Pick your favorite. It's an act of bravery to accept that this has happened in our psyche, that there is this tendency to go to insecurity. And not to pretend, not to go to pretending on top of. So usually we're feeling insecure and not quite really feeling it. And then on top, we're putting pretense. Pretense can often be like trying to not show that I'm insecure. But pretense can also be trying to show that I'm needy. It's both are adding something to the insecurity. My insecurity gives me the right to demand if I go to the negative presentation, or it gives me the right to have some space that you don't really see what's inside me if I go for the positive presentation. So the bravery of just accepting that that very painful place exists in us, where we think we have to earn our right to belong here. We fear our experience is not enough. And it is also important to know that really quite precise shape of each our own form or version of what I'm calling insecurity. Call it what you like. As we start to recognize it more often in ourselves, it can be unbearable until we realize that it's what's happening to all of us. So it's not a shameful thing that's only happening to me. It's one of the big tricks to get out of the unbearable suffering of insecurity. what do they think of me, or what do life events say about me? Those are two really common versions for where the volume of our mental activity and emotional activity goes. What do they think of me? And what do life events say? What do my situations say about me? So without budging, so that's like without the slightest movement from that deep acceptance that this shape of insecurity happened in our lives. It's not our fault, but it did happen. It does get activated. It does tend to run most of our lives, if we look honestly. So without moving a millisecond and a millimeter from the deep acceptance of that, and in fact staying exactly right there without adding anything to it, we can also drop into another kind of freedom. Sometimes it happens that it takes so many years to come to acceptance of how deep the insecurity is and how much it acts on and for us, that we forget that we are allowed to be free from insecurity. One time I was staying in a place that was out in the middle of nowhere, and over many years I had come to accept that because of life events, I was too terrified to be alone, especially in the night, out in the middle of nowhere. That was just an acceptance I had come to. The unstoppable trembling as soon as it would get dark, wherever I would be, even in a city, but certainly out in the middle of nowhere. And then life started putting me out in the middle of nowhere in the dark alone. Not quite with my, I didn't sign anywhere. And it seemed to make it impossible to think about what could happen next if I can't be here. So then, and just very simply, one time I was talking to a very good old friend. And she was relating very difficult times she was going through. And I just mentioned this, well, there's this thing where I'm kind of course I can't be here in the dark alone, so I don't know what to do. And just, I hear myself say it and I hear some other deeper place in myself just because of the kind of friendship we have. She didn't say anything. She didn't say, come on, get over it. You're deeper than that. You've been meditating for 20 years or whatever. Just the quality of the friendship and me saying truthfully, this is the situation and it seems impossible. So we'll see. Oh well. Kind of like, oh well. I can't do anything about it. And we didn't talk further about it. We talked about other things. There was plenty to talk about. And it just, over a few weeks, it became clear that obviously I could be alone in the dark, out in the middle of nowhere. According to my old set of rules, where something could happen anytime, because it did happen one time, of course I couldn't be there. Day or night. But the deeper, not quite rules, but the deeper possibilities, the deeper way of things, kind of made it known to me in that just being heard, being able to speak honestly about my perceived limitation, experience limitation, the non-limitation became clear, and then that's what happened. It became clear that Either by intuition, I would know if some weird people were coming to the middle of nowhere in the dark, and I would already be in the car, you know, away, or whatever. Or not. So if we can find like our 2 feet, both really, really firmly unmoving in the deep acceptance of both kinds of freedom, which are both impossible, really. Like, it's really humanly impossible to deeply accept how much pain there is in that insecure place where I would never belong no matter what I do. That wounded place. It's impossible to deeply accept that. And it's also impossible, especially feeling that huge wound, it's also impossible to accept that we can be and that we are free anyway. But that's what we are doing. And with both feet firmly enjoying the ground in both places. There starts to be a friendship between the two. So the very fact of that particular limitation, that particular landscape or wound or whatever that we do deeply accept when we're allowed to. That is actually what exactly gives us the experience of not limitation. It gives us a way to go. There's a kind of funny example, metaphor. This afternoon, Gyan and I were playing with one of the games that's just sitting in that kind of attic of the house where we are. There are a bunch of children's games there, by great coincidence, because otherwise Gyan would be bored with no river to swim in. After the last 3 weeks swimming in the river every day. And there's this one game that has a magnetic board and some magnetic letters that you can use to spell different words. And they, of course, give you suggestions. They don't want you to just come up with your own words. Red, blue, flower. But there are only 8 letters left in the box. And only one of those 8 is a vowel. And 2 of them are K and W. At first I thought, well, we can't really spell anything, honey. I'm really sorry. We could get some paper and pen and you can write whatever you want. But with K and W. And then partly because it was kind of too much trouble with Gayatri wanting to be on top, the little girl on top of me again here, the board game spread out, the juice, the coffee, like how am I going to get in there with nothing spilling and back out with just paper and pen? And partly just like, wait a second, let's look at the letters and see what we can spell. Maybe we can spell one word. Oh, so we could spell we. There's a W and an E. And we can spell she and he. And then we ended up spelling like 20 words, including the Shrek was towards the end. He doesn't know who Shrek is. Oh. If we'd had the whole alphabet, we probably would have had to go to their suggestions to think which word could we spell. There's so many letters to choose from. Having only eight and two of them almost worthless. K and W. You wouldn't buy those in the, what are they called? Game show. Having so little to work with made a very clear and somewhat unpredictable, but really kind of steady way to go. Maybe there's no next word. Let's look again. Ah, look, if we can spell do, we can spell hue. And so. And I'm pretty sure that he will remember those words, like do and so, so like this, and do like the morning sparkling water on the grass. Whereas if we had any choice of any letter and five E's and 16 A's, and I don't think he would really remember. It wouldn't really go in. It's something that often happens as a mother, and it's something that I wish for us, for ourselves as well, where there's this basically really fierce commitment to keeping, let's say, keeping our feet in love, like keeping totally grounded in love as much as possible, with the two sides, like the limitation is okay and the non-limitation is also allowed from love, like not the pressure that I should accept or get over it or whatever, but from love, those two, the acceptance of what's painful and limiting and unreliable and predictable, and the acceptance of our enormous depth as human beings. What would be another word than love for Anandiji? So another word for love would be confidence in insecurity. Confidence in unknown. Confidence that we can even be hopeless. But there's something in us that is not giving up. It just doesn't know how. And so there's something that's staying with what is limited and unlimited. And so there's the fact of insecurity in our lives. It's not something that we only just have a problem because of our childhood or whatever. It's actually insecure. There's the way things change, and there's the way people don't do what we want them to do. And the way, there's the way that we already got born, so dying will come. And there's also this fact of this deep wound, the wounded insecurity, which we could say too often we didn't feel that love as the ground. And so we came to believe in the possibility of not belonging. So in the talk yesterday with Ajay about the sensitive heart, Sometimes it's not anyone's fault. Many, many times it's not anyone's fault. We have this sensitive heart. And people are doing their best. And still the heart is so sensitive that it can't take the normal circumstances that go on. And we come to believe that we, with this sensitivity, can't be fully here. We come to believe in our strategies. To try to get the love or to try to pretend the confidence. To kind of get by. And that also hurts us. So there's coming to also the fact of, as we actually, it's one of the ways that there's a friendship between the deep acceptance of what's limiting us and the deep acceptance of what's calling us towards non-limitation, is that really letting the deep acceptance come over us more often. That it's really okay, that it doesn't take anything away from your value as a human being if you're overwhelmed by insecurity. It's just a state, one statement of deep acceptance. There's the invitation to start to recognize it in all of us and to feel what kind of gentleness is called for and to let that also come over us without being overprotective. It's this beautiful thing that happens with true gentleness. It's not protective. It's gambling everything without any aggression. It sounds like throwing everything away when we put everything down on gentleness, or put gentleness down on everything. When we start to feel through the deep acceptance, the actual experience of insecurity in ourselves and others, we also actually feel how destructive it is to live that way. We actually see how destructive it is to let insecurity run us. It destroys us, it destroys our relationships. It erodes the confidence others might start to be growing. This uncaged confidence, unstaged and uncaged. So that's part of the friendship between the 2 feet. The more gentleness there is, the more the fact of the destructiveness of insecurity comes clear, not as a blame or a criticism, but as a fact. And the gentleness would wish not to harm me or you, and is willing to gamble, that means willing to leave it all behind and make a different kind of gesture or no gesture, a different kind of word or no word. And in a way, when we start to feel how destructive it is when we come from insecurity, which we can also call demand or neediness or whatever, persona, we might as well take a risk, and what we say or do or don't say or don't do might not be great, but it won't be worse than what we've been repeating all along. And at least it's a kind of honest mistake. Then there's really allowing ourselves to let gentleness happen to us. That means being with friends where that is the atmosphere, and that it means letting that be something we develop in us in every way we can. So this is the main practice for most of us. But it doesn't mean also that that is the end, that it's only just for that. So again, it's not only that we apply gentleness as a remedy for this painful, raw insecurity that's kind of running our lives. And only that, that's all. But where is the gentleness, where's the source of the gentleness, first of all? Whose is that? What does it belong to? What does it take us into? And also, what does happen when we feel maybe the cells are kind of plumped up with love sometimes? If we don't think, sometimes we might forget that that's not just the end point of our practice, just to get the cells plumped up with love. Ah, good. That's great. It's needed, and it's helpful, and it's wonderful. But it's not just about trying to feel safe and loved and held and protected, and then we're good. But to let us see what happens when I feel safe and held and loved or belonging. What do we drop into? It's so subtle that we can forget that part. But it's important to have the 2 feet. On the way over here, I saw this little tiny, I don't know what to call it even, piece of a tree on the ground as I was thinking about freedom both ways. And it seems important somehow. One thing that can happen when there is, when we're kind of amongst gentleness, and our cells are all in amongst gentleness, and the strategies and the ways of trying to get and get away and all start to feel a little bit more foreign, a little bit more like someone else. and not like me and who I am. We can start to let the question come, what is or what was being protected after all? What was that all about again? Like trying to make sure you like me, or if, make sure you don't like me so you'll leave me alone so I have my space. Or those are two main ways. If the ways of protecting are so painful, then they're not about trying to get rid of that pain or heal that pain. But I think that that's somehow the twisted idea. That if I have defenses from you all, won't that do something for this pain? And when we start to let it unravel and feel what actually is our experience. So there is some feeling of, even within insecurity, some feeling of security or confidence that doesn't mind that there's change and that people do what they want and that we're going to die. It could even just be a straight question to that pain. What do you want? In that kind of tone, like the conversation with my friend on the voice, my friend on the Skype, it was actually, about the impossibility of being alone in the dark away from everybody. There's something in us that also loves the fact of insecurity. It gives this possibility to move, to gamble. Somehow there can start to grow a sense of confidence or security with life as it is, without any promise. We could say without any hope, without any reason, there's still some sense of belonging, not because someone liked me or because I did something well, or but just before I can speak or think, already belonging. Almost like, how could I get away from this? Belonging that keeps following me. With no guarantee. There's something in us that loves that. That there's no guarantee. Sometimes we don't feel very much like accepting the risks. And that doesn't also matter too much. What we feel like. And there's something in us that loves that too, that it doesn't matter so much what I feel like. I'm not in the mood today for life, sorry. It doesn't matter, luckily. There's something that belongs anyway. There's something that, where there is deep acceptance anyway. And there's this door that might even be open of what else is there. An invitation. That even if I feel insecure, I can feel as insecure as I want. It doesn't take anything away from deep belonging and all the nourishment that I need, all the wisdom that I need, the insight, the energy, the stamina, the gentleness. the creativity. So we don't need to watch what we're feeling so carefully. And I would even say we need to not watch, like the weather station. Is it going to rain? Of course it's going to rain. Eventually. So where that foot is through in love, grounded in a place that very lovingly doesn't care what we feel today, doesn't care what mood we're in. It cares in a deeper way. It cares that even if you're in a bad mood, something can move you in a subtle way. And even because of the bad mood, it could move you in a much more subtle way, that it's not about me doing well on my spiritual path, kind of ding, 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 cycling along. The freedom that no matter what you're feeling, what else is there? What else is left? That's not pointing you in a particular direction. It has a steadiness. A steadiness like this friend that I mentioned, who just heard me say something. She didn't have to even answer. She might have said, at most. We hardly ever speak on the phone. We hardly see each other. It's a good kind of metaphor, this friendship with Shobha. Over many years, maybe since 92 or 3 or 4. So if we allow the very practical, simple, within the realm of the limited, this healing of being around love, learning love by being around it, practicing love inside us as much as we can, because what else could be more fun? As a main practice, a main way of spending our time, whether we're on a meditation retreat or off. That real nourishment that's also, it goes beyond the simple gestures that are also important. It's where the gentleness carries the both feet. They're the simple gestures of love and caring and gentleness that travel through and ripple through our whole system when it lands. But it also speaks of something beyond getting that same gesture to happen again from that same person or button or whatever. We're not a rat in a maze trying to get treats. So the quality of love when we let it wash over and through us tells us that. It's not limited to that gesture, but that gesture is important. And then freedom in both ways, there's also that spaciousness of no guarantee, of somehow, for some reason or no reason, confidence for no reason because it's insecure, it's unpredictable. What loves that in us knows how to be moved not just in a different direction, or let's try this way, or let's try that way, or but without a direction. Or staying with what's not a thing, or what's not an object, what's not a feeling, or an interpretation, or a hope. What's especially not a story that confirms that I really don't belong, because so-and-so or such-and-such. Like really, really firmly not believing that story that will be told very, very loudly again and again, not believing it, no matter how many signs you have that it's true. Between these two feet, or this little piece of the tree, between the two sides, also in us, in the space between the two sides, something does actually rise up. And it's not about a hope, or maybe I'll try this and that'll work. It's about, without any guarantee, for no reason, something happens to keep rising up, no matter what mood I'm in. I remember one friend was managing quite a few retreats in a row in the very beginning of Open Dharma. And so there was a lot of new things to figure out, and there weren't so many systems in place. And every time writing it out by hand and posting it, and then it would rain, and writing it again. And oh no, the potatoes weren't done at dinner. We asked the cook to recook the food. It's going to be too late for, oh my gosh. And she was a very moody person. And one thing she loved about being a manager is that it didn't matter what mood she was in. When someone came in the morning out of the time that they were supposed to come, but needed a Band-Aid, or there was one really funny. Because there's, well, I'll just tell you. Even though I shouldn't. Someone came out of the time. So there's a time to see the manager with medical issues, or if you need something, like a Band-Aid or toothpaste, you dropped your soap down the toilet or whatever. And this was not that time. And someone came, I think it was even late at night, and said, could you please look here? Something is going on, I don't know what. I'm really sorry to ask you. And my friend who was managing was not in the mood. But it's not something you say no to. Because imagine how terrifying for that person to open up in that way. And she had some really painful medical thing going on there that needed some medical thing to be applied like twice a day or whatever. So it ended up being one of those deep friendships. I haven't seen that person again probably for 12 years, but we both really, and also the manager, we know who we are, and there's a deep friendship through what wasn't supposed to happen. It's not in the manual for the manager. And it's not in the manual for the retreatant either. Having some kind of anal cyst. And at that point, there was not so much lying down going on. More sitting. A famous part of a poem by T.S. Eliot to end with. He uses kind of religious words that I wouldn't use, but he's saying something important. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. wait without love, for love would be love for the wrong thing. Wait without thought, for you are not yet ready for thought. For you are not ready for thought. There is yet faith, what I'm calling confidence for no reason. But the faith and the hope and the love are all in the waiting. So in the darkness shall be the light, and in the stillness the dancing. So it's many times being ready for the impossible and even feeling the love of the impossible with the 2 feet grounded through that love in what is the limitation and the invitation to not limitation. The invitation to let that very limitation, honest, real, not your fault, and not forever. It was made that shape, it is being unmade that shape. It's being freed from that shape. It doesn't have to become a different shape, a better shape. We're just leaving shape without a guarantee. Some other kind of security that we can feel when we let ourselves, through love, be grounded in what is, and it may feel like just waiting. Not knowing what to do, if it's possible to do, if there's anything to do, if this is the end. Could be. And also willing to leave behind all that is behind us. That's part of the trust with gambling, is leaving behind what's behind allows whatever there was in our past that might be nourishing, it allows it to be nourishing. Whereas if I hold to my past experience of love through hoping, then I'm completely lost, I'm not in my ground. I have no way to make a step because I'm not touching the ground. And even to be willing without thought, to be ready, for there to be readiness without a thought about my readiness. So it can be not my readiness. And then what's left? Honestly, what's left? And what happens when we're honestly with what's left with our 2 feet ready for freedom both ways? What's left rises up. What seemed to be darkness is light, as well as dark, and both are good. What seems to be growing up and feel supportive to me is not for me, and not for me. much better than we'd hoped for. Because it's in freedom. May all beings be happy. May our confidence with and in life flower as realization in this very life. And participate in the stillness and the dancing of this momentum towards liberation everywhere.